Welcome to William Hill's Rugby Union podcast. It's that time of year again when all rugby attentions are turned to the Northern Hemisphere's premier international competition, the Six Nations, which takes on extra significance in 2015 as later in the year it is the Rugby World Cup, hosted right here in England. I'm Michael Casey and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line by a man who has played in Six Nations, or Five Nations as it was known then, and a Rugby World Cup wearing the Red Rose of England, Jeff Probyn. Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Michael. Nice to hear from you again. Looking forward to a great Six Nations.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed it should be. There's been plenty of interest and talk in the build-up, and I think one thing that's kind of dominated the headlines, I guess, has been the injuries and the injury woes to two of the main sides in the competition, the bookies' favourites in the competition, England and Ireland.
Yeah, they have. I mean, particularly England. Ireland have suffered a few losses for injury. Losing Jamie Heaslip before tomorrow's game as well is a major blow. For Saturday's game is a major blow. The big thing is, of course, that they've got Sean O'Brien back. So from their point of view, they're quite pleased. With England, well, the only thing you can say about England is whatever happens tomorrow night in Cardiff, really, England are bound to be winners. If they lose, they'll lose because they've got about their third 15 out. If they win, it's going to be a major, major positive for them. In many ways, this is a game that Wales can't win, because if they win, they'll be expected to win, and if they lose, it'll be a disaster.
How much bearing do you think tomorrow evening's result has on proceedings later in the year when the World Cup bears round?
Absolutely none.
Absolutely none, fair enough.
I mean, people always talk these things up and down, and, you know, it's if you've got a winning mentality where you've had a series of wins, I mean, what would, you know, you only have to look at it and really judge World Cups by the one country that has been constantly failing in World Cups when they should have dominated them, which is New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand have constantly been the best team in the world, where they're going into World Cups. We've had seven World Cups now. Going into each of those World Cups, the number one team in the world has been New Zealand. And yet, they've won no more World Cups than any other nation. So, you know, in that sense, it's not about how well you're performing within your local region. It's what you do on the global stage. And the reality is that Six Nations is important because it gives both the national coaches, plus also the players, a sense of where they are in the global game. It also enables you to establish a strength in depth. And if you like, one of the positives from England's point of view of suffering all the injuries that they have suffered, from the likes of Joe Launchbury through to Manu Tuilagi, all the injuries in and out there, and even Owen Farrell's recent injury, what that does is it does give Stuart Lancaster the opportunity to find what strength in depth he's got in his squad. What players do come in should his number one choice is not actually be fit. A lot of teams who've constantly played the same players don't have that luxury. So in some ways it's good for England's World Cup. In some ways it's bad.
Okay, well, England's opening fixture, I mean, of course, we both probably have a natural bias, but, I mean, looking at the way it's priced up, certainly looks like it's going to be the tie of the weekend. They have to go to Cardiff, and obviously we have memories of what happened the last time England travelled to the Millennium Stadium for a Six Nations clash. They're going to be taking on a full-strength Welsh side. Friday night, split opinion on whether they think the good things or bad things with regards to the time of the game. But for this tie, Jeff, a full-strength Welsh side, a price up is 8-15 favourites. England are 13-8 underdogs. There's a four-point handicap for this game, which kicks off a little after 8 o'clock tomorrow evening. Jerome Garces is the ref for tomorrow evening. I live with a tight-head prop who plays the game professionally, and I said to him, I asked him what he thought of Jerome Garces, and he says he's not bad in the scrum. He says he's not quite as good as Romain Pouat, but he should keep it honest and fair enough. We discussed this before coming on air, Jeff. We think one of the key battles tomorrow, particularly with Adam Jones now retiring, could be how young 22-year-old Samson Lee gets on for Wales tomorrow.
I certainly think so. It's interesting when we're talking about Romain Pouat as a referee and saying, you know, he's good on the scrums. A French referee good on the scrums is an oxymoron, believe me. But Samson Lee, he's a young lad. He's stepped up. He's taking the place of a legend in Wales in Adam Jones. And it is key if Joe Marler can gain a dominance over Samson Lee, then all the big names in the Welsh backs count for nothing. You look at the way England played their game in the Autumn Internationals, the game particularly against Australia, where they dominated the front five of Australia, and that's what won England the game. You know, despite the fact that worldwide, everyone will tell you that Australia had one of the best back lines in the world. You know, they're on parallel with the likes of New Zealand in terms of their back play. It's their tight set piece play that lets them down. The same thing could happen to Wales tomorrow night. You know, they've brought back Richard Hibbard, obviously, to give a bit of stability to that front row. Geoffrey Jenkins, very established player, but in all truth, not actually one of the best scrummagers in the world. One of the reasons he didn't make it in France when he went over to Toulon, he spent all his time sitting on the bench, not actually playing many games, was because they didn't rate him in terms of his scrummaging prowess. They rated him very much as a field player, as a loose rugby player. But in the set piece, he finds himself sometimes under pressure. So from an England point of view, that's the area you're going to attack. If they can attack that area and be successful there, they do have a chance to actually put pressure on that Welsh side, make them go into a defensive mode rather than attacking mode, and that makes life that much more awkward for the likes of Jamie Roberts, Jonathan Davis, and obviously George North. Dan Biggar's now established himself as the number one fly half in Wales, and it's just about whether his kicking game will be good enough to put Wales on the front foot.
Yeah, let's just run through the two lineups for England and Wales. He's both named, and obviously an interesting tactic. I think we maybe discussed earlier that it's probably mind games from Gatland et al. Naming the Wales side on Monday, a couple of days before they were due to or had to. They go with Lee Halfpenny at fullback, wingers of Alex Cuthbert and George North, centre pairing Jonathan Davies and Jamie Roberts, halfbacks Reece Webb and Dan Biggar. Up front, as you mentioned, Geoffrey Jenkins, Richard Hibbard and Samson Lee. Second row of Alan Wynne-Jones and Jake Ball, and a back row of Dan Lydiard, captain Sam Warburton and Toby Faletau at eight. England, fullback Mike Brown, wingers Anthony Watson and Johnny May, centres. And this for me is quite the interesting part of the team: Jonathan Joseph and Luther Burrell, halfbacks Ben Youngs and George Ford. Up front, Marla Hartley and Dan Cole. Dave Atwoods and George Cruz make the second row. James Haskell, Chris Robshaw and Billy Villapola at the back of the scrum for England. So, I mean, there's a couple of, I don't know if eyebrow raising is the right term to use, but a couple of interesting selections there. I know Dylan Hartley's selection yet again has had people talking and believing that perhaps he's, well, questioning whether Tom Youngs doesn't deserve the nod at hooker. And it is an inexperienced but quite attacking looking, I guess, centre pairing, Jonathan Joseph and Luther Burrell there. I mean, on the bench, your back's replacements, you do have Billy 12 Trees. What do you make of Stuart Lancaster's selection, Jeff?
It's quite an exciting selection, yeah, in many ways, it's got to be said. I mean, you know, Anthony Watson on the wing, only a couple of caps in his hands. Johnny May, again, a few caps in his hands, played some exciting runs. He is an exciting runner, Johnny May, and, you know, we've seen the way he just comes off his wing, and he had added an element of uncertainty when England were playing in the Autumn Internationals. And I mean that uncertainty in a good way, in that opposition didn't know where he was going to turn up or what he wasn't going to do. We know that Jonathan Joseph is a very exciting player playing down in Bath. Despite the fact that Bath have the likes of Sam Burgess on their books, it's still Joseph who's mainly kept in the team, and they move out Carl Eastman to create the space for Burgess. So Bath's Mike Ford sees him as a very, very talented player, and he is a very talented player. If that partnership works well, it could trouble Wales. Wales have got Jonathan Davies back. I mean, Jonathan Davies, everyone talks about Jamie Roberts, obviously he's a big physical lad, but Jonathan Davies has always played very, very well off of him. They're both playing in France now, so that would have improved their peripheral vision, so we say, the ability to find players around them, because French rugby does that with you. So it's going to be an interesting battle in the midfield. As far as Dylan Hartley is concerned, the big worry about Dylan Hartley is whether or not he's going to control the side of him that's always giving away yellow cards or potentially red cards and penalties. And with a kicker like Lee Halfpenny in the side, you can't afford to give him opportunities. There's no doubt that Hartley is actually a better technical hooker than Tom Youngs. Tom Youngs is probably better at carrying the ball in the loose field, but if this is a tight game played in the scrums, it's going to be a major, major battle up front, particularly in that hooker position where Hibbard is a bit of a lump of a lad as well. So it will be an interesting battle. I have to say, in all honesty, even though I'm saying all this and I'm looking at England and I'm quite pleased with England, I honestly don't think that they will have enough to win down in Cardiff. I think it will be a lot closer than most people think. It won't be the rout that it was 2 years ago. This England side will play well, and I expect them to put the cosh a little bit on the Welsh side. But as I say, a lot will depend on how well Joe Marler dominates Samson Lee.
Sadly, I have to say I agree with you, Jeff. England, Wales, obviously 8-15 favourites. The handicap then is 4 points. Do you think that Wales can maybe cover that? 4 or more points for Wales, 10-11 that they win by a minimum of 5 points, Jeff?
I think they'll win by more than that. I think that Wales will win by about 6 or 7 points, to be honest with you.
Interesting.
I don't see it going to, what I'm saying, I don't see it going to the cricket score it was 2 years ago. England are a better side now in terms of their defence and the way they've patterned and structured their game. Their forward game has come together far better. I think George Cruz being in the side is a bonus. He's great around the field. He produces some good hits. He's been a power substitute when he's come on for England during the Autumn Internationals. The experience of James Haskell coming back into the back row is very, very positive and works well. And Billy Vinopola, it'll be an interesting battle between Vinopola and Faletto, because they're both very similar players. They're both very dynamic, both ball-carrying. I think of the two of them, Billy Vinopola is probably the best ball-carrying player, but Faletto is probably a better tackling, struggling defensive type of number eight. So England have picked a very attacking side. It's how they defend that will define the game.
Wales minus four there at 10-11. We have got some interesting headline offers about this game as well. If you do think that Wales might be able to do to pull away, perhaps you can bat them to win by 10 or more points at 9-4. Wales to be leading at half time and to win the game on the Wales double result is a shades of odds against at 11-10 also. And there's a couple of headline offers that involve try scorers. We've got England to win the match and Johnny May to score a try at 11-2. But I guess for you, Jeff, you might be interested in this Wales to win the match. And if they do, is it an inevitability that George North will cross the whitewash? Him to score in a Wales win is 9-4.
Well, I'd put my money on Alex Cuthbert.
Okay, Alex Cuthbert to score at any time in the betting. Second favourite there at 15-8.
The reason I say that is because Alex Cuthbert seems to have a habit of scoring against England when George North doesn't. I think George is... because he plays in the England Premiership, everyone knows him. He's got a big target written on him, which as soon as he gets the ball, all the alarm bells ring and everyone goes for him. Somehow or another, Alex Cuthbert seems to sneak under the radar, and he's had a couple of good tries against England and been really quite successful against England in the past. So there's no reason to think that would change.
There at 15-8 then, if you fancy Alex Cuthbert and Wales on the handicap, minus 4 points, 10-11, Jeff's recommendation. We'll move over to the weekend's second game then, Italy versus Ireland. This from the Stadio Olimpico. Ireland are, as you might expect, heavy favourites for this one. 1-5 on the outright. Italy priced up at 4-1, the handicap, 11 points. I mean, looking at Italy's record in the tournament, Jeff, they've lost 15 of their 17 games since June 2013. That's not even looking in this tournament, that's looking across the board. An away record of 36 defeats in 38 away matches in the Six Nations. Treviso and Zebre are not doing much in the Pro 12. Is this just going to be a formality for Joe Smith's men?
Well, just remember that 2 years ago they did actually beat Ireland.
It's not completely beyond the realms.
Yeah, it's not completely beyond the realms. I mean, you know, the reality is that this Ireland side are very strong. You've got Tommy Bowe back in the side. You've got Rob Kearney. Henshaw's come in for O'Driscoll's retirement, and you know, you've got a makeup of this this side that really have put together some good games. I mean, Payne's playing now instead of Darcy as well. So it's a new centre parting pairing rather, but that pairing have stepped up to that role of taking over from Darcy and O'Driscoll very, very well, and they've made they've managed to keep a semblance of balance within that Irish side. The only thing for me that's interesting is obviously Sexton not playing. It's whether Keatley will be able to stay on his mettle. I mean, one of the aspects about the Italians is they are, as it's being played in Rome, they will be aggressive. They will be in the Irish face. They've got a good set of forwards. Sergio Praise is always there. He's always there or thereabouts. Castro Giovanni is in that front row for the Italian side. So we know that they've got a set of forwards that can actually play the game and are quite strong. They've kept who I believe is one of the best scrum halves in world rugby at the moment, Gori, playing for them, and he's starting for the Italians with Luke McLean. Now, Luke McLean gives them the stability at fly half that they've always struggled with. So the Italians are a far better unit than they were even 3 or 4 years ago. Jack Brunel has done wonders with them. This is his last season with them. And I think to a certain extent they're going to want to go out on the bang. I can't see them beating Ireland because to me, and you know, you'll probably ask me this later and think Ireland are my tournament favourites for this year. I think that they're just playing some very, very good rugby at this moment in time. And if they can maintain that form, the form that they took into the Autumn Internationals and take it through, I can see them winning the Six Nations. But I think this will be this won't be the cakewalk that everyone expects. I think it will be a good, close game. It'll be a bit messy. I expect the Irish will do what they always do in these sort of games. And you can see the likes of Tommy Bow really getting out there and playing some rugby. And Zeebo as well, Simon Zeebo, it's a big chance for him. He's in this Irish side again. He had a great time when he was last playing for them. He had a few injury worries and has come back from those now. So they have a great attacking dimension to this Irish side. They're no longer like the old Irish sides, which were all forward dominated. So it's going to be a good game between Italy and Italy. I expect Ireland to win, and I expect it will probably be between 10 and 15 points, but they're going to know they're in the game.
Okay, then. Well, then the handicap is 11 points, so I guess you probably just about inside that Ireland minus 11 points at 10 to 11. Elsewhere, you can look at things like the winning margin live, perhaps 10 to 15 points is available to, sorry, 11 to 15 points available to back at 9 to 2 that Ireland win the game by 11 to 15 points. I think the point you made about Sexton not being available, obviously last year's top point scorer, the only Northern Hemisphere player to be nominated for the World Rugby Player of the Year. And not only that, the amount of I think that Conor Murray's a better player when Sexton's there. Ian Keatley obviously makes the fly half jersey his own for this clash with Italy, but it will be interesting to see the influence that Sexton has when he's back in the side. Obviously not played since November, the talisman. You mentioned a couple of players in there. Obviously you mentioned Luke McLean, who will be playing on the wing for Italy. They give the fly half jersey to a New Zealand born fly half, Kelly Haimone, who we saw in the autumn, was a quite an interesting player, made a decent impact in the game which they won against Samoa, and I thought he looked alright against Argentina even though they lost out. Only 24, and I think playing outside Gori will suit the inexperience of Kelly Haimone, but to be interesting to see how it goes. Of course, Luke McLean in the squad, he's going to be playing on the wing. If you think he could maybe sneak over any time, it's 5-1. Simon Zeebo is favourite in the market for Islanders for any time try scorer, 11-8. Are there any other players you'd maybe fancy for a try on Saturday afternoon, Jeff?
I think Andre Massey,
let's have a look. I imagine there'll be a decent price about Massey. 8-1 that Massey scores any time. We will move on to the final of the three games from the opening round of this year's Six Nations Championship, and that is going to see Scotland travel to France. I've seen one headline this weekend, Jeff. Allez le Rouge, because of course France are going to be ditching their traditional blue strip in favour of red in this weekend's game. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm always puzzled by this because it's normally the away team that's supposed to change their strip in most sports, but in rugby it's always the home team. So the mere fact that France are playing in the Stade de France means that they have to change their strip. If you remember a few years ago, England had that awful grey shirt that they wore.
Just looked dirty, didn't it?
Yeah, when they were at Twickenham. It's just the way that rugby teams do it. When, you know, I suppose because it's the norm in football for the away team to change their strip, that in rugby the home team do it. It's more or less a gentleman's thing, saying, you know, well, we understand that you're travelling all this way to us, so rather than you carrying two bags of kit, we'll change ours. They're a bit like that. I can't believe the French are like it, but never mind.
Well, there we go.
It's going to be, I mean, this game is going to be, in some ways, the most interesting of all the games for the weekend.
Mm.
Simply because we'll know whether Vern Cotter has actually got it right. You know, we will see with his Scottish team whether they are as good as the autumn suggests. I mean, in the autumn they played Tonga, they played Argentina, who realistically are still tier two teams. You know, Argentina are rather like Italy, but they're like Italy were 5-6 years ago. They've moved up into that top tier, playing in that Super Rugby competition now down south. But the reality is that they still struggle to keep their players at home. They still don't get together very often. They're not the full side that they perhaps used to be, and they're not as high a standard as, say, Italy are now. So from the results that Scotland got in there, and remember, Scotland didn't do too bad against New Zealand, but it was a very, very weak New Zealand side that Scotland did all right against. So, you know, we mustn't get too carried away. What we'll find out on Saturday is whether or not all the hopes and aspirations of all of us who hope that Scotland get back to being that established side that they were from in the 80s and 90s is actually real, that this team can go out there and can produce competent competition against the other teams in the Six Nations. With Scotland suffering with so few players, the worry was that they would start to fall away and therefore reduce the value of the Six Nations as a competition. They've managed to avoid that. They're doing well in Europe. Their two teams, Glasgow, are playing particularly well. So there is a chance for them to play successful rugby. This French team is completely different to the French teams we've seen before. I mean, there's a couple of South Africans playing in it. San Andre has gone with the foreign horde, so that he's being the Le Monde is saying, and all the other rugby papers over in France and Midi Olympique are complaining that he's picking too many foreigners now. But he's picking the players who are playing the best in the top 14. And so this is an experimental side as far as San Andre is concerned. But it will be interesting to see how it actually turns out and how it plays. It's going to be a very strong side. Dussatoire's come back as captain, you know, recovered from all the injuries he had over the last season. We've got they're not playing at scrum half, so it's an interesting time. It's from looking at the French side, you've got Bastereau as well, the big lump of a lad, and Fofana. Fofana's still one of the world's best centres playing at the moment, and with that sort of combination and the rough, tough forwards that the French have got, it'll be interesting to see how Scotland does.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Vern Cotter has done quite well in Scotland. They've won 5 of their 7 tests since he took over, and jury's certainly very much still out on Philippe Saint-André, the squad that he's picked for this weekend's game. Scott Spedding at full-back. You've got Yohannou Gueye, Mathieu Bastereau, Redzi Fofana, Teddy Thomas, Camille Lopez, and Rory Cocott as a backline. I tell you what, Jeff, just running through that backline, you think that on their day, and this is obviously the age-old concern with France, they could rip any side to shreds. Then the forward complement, Damien Chouli, Thierry Dussatoire, Bernard Leroux, Yann Mastry, Pascal Pape, Rabah Samani, Guillaume Girardot, and Alexandre Manini. So there is an undoubted plethora of talent about that Scottish side. About that French side. I'll run through the Scottish side now as well. Stuart Hogg, Tommy Seymour, Mark Bennett, Alex Dunbar, Tim Visser, Finn Russell and Greg Leadlaw make up the back division. Up front, Alistair Dickinson, Ross Ford, Ewan Murray, Richie Gray, Johnny Gray, Rob Harley, Blair Cowan and Johnny Beattie. With regards to the betting in this one, it is 2-9 France, 7-2 Scotland. The handicap set at 10. Jeff, what sort of bets would you be looking at here?
Well, I think the handicap may well be 15 or 20.
Well, the handicap minus 10 about France and 10 to 11. You can look at bigger scores if you like. We have got alternative handicaps available. You could maybe look at France minus 15, almost 2 to 1, yet 19 to 10 for that. Or again, the winning margin live, which is a bet that we've had success with before on this podcast. Perhaps look at something like 16 to 20 points, the winning margin for France at 13 to 2.
I think that's a good bet. I think, this French side, Teddy Thomas, as you're saying, is a fantastic winger, a lightning pace, an exceptional player. He's opened a few eyes in the last season. We saw him playing it towards the end of last season. He's an exciting young player. The French side have really changed, and they want to do something in the Six Nations. Their last two outings in the Six Nations have been appalling by French standards, and San Andre's been relatively lucky to retain his position as the coach. Normally in France, if you have the results that San Andre's been getting, they'll pull out the guillotine and off you'll go. This French side is given a chance. This is probably his last shot at this. If he doesn't get well in this Six Nations, do well in the Six Nations and in the World Cup at the end of the year, France will be looking for a new coach, and there's no doubt about that. So San Andre is thrown caution to the wind. He's put out what is a very exciting back line. Good set of forwards, obviously the physical side. All French forwards are a physical side. Do think that Scotland do have a chance in the line-out. I think with obviously with the two Gray brothers there.
Plenty of height there, isn't there?
It's height, but it's also technique. They've got good skills and good coordination. So there's an area there where Scotland can be pretty sure they will get the ball. I expect France will give them a bit of a rough time in the set piece, despite the fact they've got Ewan Murray back. I mean, in a way, Cotter's trying to err on the side of caution by sticking a player like Murray back in the side, who's a good technical scrummager. But he's not been playing international that often over the past few years because of his religious beliefs. And, to throw him back into this sort of level of competition, it's probably not fair on him a little bit. I don't see the back line for the Scotland side being good enough to threaten the French over a long period of time. I'm pleased that Tim Visser's back in the Scottish side. I think that he was very unfortunate in the last season not to get as many caps as perhaps he should have done. He did get injured outside, but when he got back fit, he wasn't included in the side. Obviously, Stuart Hogg's a world-class player. So there is a bit of talent in that back line, but that midfield of Alex Dunbar, Mark Bennett, I'm not really too sure how they can compete against that Welsh midfield of Bastereau and Fofana. It's that area where I see problems for Scotland.
Yet to finish above fourth under Philippe Saint-André, the French, but with a very strong side named, could perhaps cover the handicap, minus 10 points at 10 to 11, or a 16 to 20 winning margin at 13 to 2. Now, Jeff, I want to get on to crunch time. Obviously, that's this weekend's games done with. We'll jump straight in. I'll just ask the question. Who do you think is going to win the Six Nations this year?
Well, I think on paper, you've got to look at it and say that the team that has the best credentials to win this, given their awesome performances, and also the stability of the side and the way that new players have come in and actually fitted in well, is Ireland. I think that Ireland have the opportunity to take this Six Nations. I don't see anyone getting the Grand Slam, to be honest with you, but I think that Ireland will, the way the games are mapping out as well with the fixtures, where teams play at home, where teams play away, it suits Ireland. I see Ireland coming up as the overall champions with either England or Wales behind them. And France will take the that fourth spot again.
Once again, Ireland 15-8 favourites. England, interestingly, despite being outsiders for Friday's game, 2-1 second favourites. It's then Wales at 3-1, 6-1 France, 25-1 Scotland, and name your price, Italy 250-1. No Grand Slam winner is a backup up 4-6. It's 11-2 Ireland, 6-1 England, 6-1 Wales, 12-1 France, 51 Scotland, and 1,000-1 Italy. Jeff, a recommendation for Ireland there. I'm going to say it, and I don't like to do so. I think the 3-1 for Wales might be worth looking at. They've got, obviously, England going to Cardiff on Friday. They also have Ireland having to travel to the Millennium Stadium. They don't have the same injury concerns as England and Ireland. Obviously, Gatland has won this enough times before. I think that there might be a slight psychological boost for them on Friday. I think at 3-1, I'm going to go. I don't like to say it. I think I'm going to go with Wales for this year's Six Nations Championship.
I was just going to say to you that you just think of the one team that has always gone to Cardiff and performed really well, Ireland.
Yeah, I was going to say not England.
Ireland. Ireland, even in the days when it was Fortress Cardiff, Ireland would go there and win quite comfortably. There's something about the way the Irish play that the Welsh don't like, and that's why they stay favourites for me.
There we go. That's 15-8 Ireland, 3-1 England. 2-1 England, 3-1 Wales, and the picks there. Jeff, there's a market available as well that I want to talk about. This is a market that we'll lose after the competition kicks off, and that's the tournament top try scorer. A quick look through the history books would say that 5 tries would probably give you the crown. 4 tries, you'd be there or thereabouts, and 3 or less, you haven't got much chance. Previous winners last year, Mike Brown and Johnny Sexton shared the honours. It had been a big prize for Johnny Sexton. 2013, Alex Cuthbert, aided by that performance against England, took the spoils. 2012, Tommy Bowe won it. In 2011, Chris Ashton's 3 tries against, was it 4 tries against Italy, aided him to pick up the honours. And in 2010, about 8 players were tied on 3 tries. With regards to the favourites in the market, you've got 6-1 favourite George North, 7-1 second favourite Johnny May, then it's Teddy Thomas, Alex Cuthbert, Tommy Bowe, Yohan Huguet, Simon Zeebo, Anthony Watson, and then the prices get bigger. So you, in the favourites in the market, are basically the main contenders, back threes, if you like. Then obviously as you go down, you've got bigger and more extravagant prices about the rest. Are there any players this tournament that I may have mentioned, that I may not have mentioned, that you would think are worth parting with a few quid to get the top try scorer accolade?
Well, you're not looking at centres and players like that.
Well,
you
know, I am.
Fofana's got to be in there somewhere.
I was going to come up with my own recommendation after I'd perhaps heard yours. Fofana, by the way, if you fancy that 16-1 for the French outside centre to notch the most tries in the 2015 tournament. No, it is actually...
I'm going to go for a Frenchman, though, but I just mentioned Fofana, but okay. I'm not going for him. I'm going to go for Thomas.
Yeah, Teddy Thomas. His try-scoring pedigree in what's a very short international career thus far is quite unarguable, it does have to be said. Teddy Thomas is in the betting at 8-1, so there's still plenty of value to be had about backing him. You can also look at backing each way in this tournament. You'd be placed out at a quarter of the odds should he finish in the top 4, so that's worth looking at. Perhaps each way betting, you still get paid out at 2-1 as long as he's in and around the mix. I'm going to look at a different centre, Jeff, as my selection for this, and it's one that starts this weekend, and that is Jonathan Joseph. He's of course had a pretty decent season with Bath this season. 8 tries in 18 games for Bath so far. Also, it looks like George Ford is getting the nod at 10. Obviously, no Owen Farrell. Danny Cipriani, the replacement option, but plenty of questions about Cipriani. I think we'll see George Ford line up in the 10 jersey for the majority of the games. The two work well together, and the price about Jonathan Joseph, I believe I saw earlier, at 33-1 for Jonathan Joseph any time is a cheeky outside recommendation.
That's worth the sneaky tenner.
Oh, there we go, sneaky tenner on Jonathan Joseph, as well as the French pairing of Teddy Thomas and Wesley Fofana from Jeff. Jeff, I look forward to watching this weekend's and tomorrow's games as much as you, I'm sure, and I look forward to catching back up with you after round one next week.
Well, let's hope we're on the money.
Fingers crossed.